Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and boys and girls. And I do want to underscore boys and girls. Welcome to Evident Footprints. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next 2 hours here on bbsradio.com. And I want to welcome you as well as give a shout-out to some folks with Project Alliance. I haven't actually greeted these folks for quite a while. They're avid listeners and avid supporters of Evident Footprints, and they're spreading the word around further than you can ever imagine. I want to say hello to Karen, Bob, and Bill, David Crenshaw, Sheila, also Zachariah and Jill, and the General. I hope you folks are enjoying the show. It's nice to have you listening and supporting the message that we're bringing out. It's very encouraging. Also, I want to thank Teresa for sending a link to a video, and I'm going to be giving that address out, Teresa in Michigan. There's a really, really interesting expose that kind of shows us the truth. It sorts out all the wheat from the chaff. There's not a whole lot of wheat, actually. It's mostly chaff. I'll go into that in a moment. Want to remind you tomorrow evening, our regular Friday night guest, our resident science advisor, Jim Murray, will be with us again on Evident Footprints. And since we have a new month, here we are, October 30th, or if you're on the East Coast and the Central Time Zone, it's already the last day of the month, October 31st. All Hallows Eve, or as we call it around the country, Halloween. And they've got the fear going on the boob tube, nonstop horror pictures all week long to really crank up that fear factor and that lower vibration. And, of course, to give honor to Satan and the demonic forces that rule this world. And if you can look at those movies, those of you that like to watch them and study them a bit and discern what's really going on, they come across like comedies more than anything. I used to love to watch the spooky movies, and I guess I was learning about the dark side while I was doing that. And yes, when I was very young, I would get scared like everybody else, and I know many adults today that just get as scared as I did when I was a child. These are illusions like everything else. The thing is that these movies are produced for the very purpose that I just described, to create fear and to get you to buy into illusions. And yet these are the very things that the controllers across the world, these elite that like to call themselves the Illuminati, produce to sort of memorialize their beliefs and their methods and their rituals. So often there's a lot of subliminal messages in these movies, and as you get into looking at them for what they are and not accepting them as a real possibility, you will see that this is just another one of the tools that they use to dumb down the masses. And as I mentioned, to create fear, to keep you in fear and afraid that someone is going to come and eat you. And all the while, you're waiting for that boogeyman. The boogeyman is right in front of you. And they're eating you from every angle, mostly through your taxes, mostly through legal methods. That really serve no purpose other than to take your sovereign rights under God away from you. So it's okay to celebrate Halloween if you must do so. The kids enjoy it. They enjoy pretending that they're someone else. In fact, if you think about that custom of putting on a costume and hiding who you really are, isn't that exactly what they do? Aren't those the methods they use in their secrecy, their secret societies, and the secret motives that they plan over hundreds and even thousands of years, ultimately to enslave the whole populace? Now, with that, I'm going to mention again this video that Teresa in Michigan sent, and I'm going to give you the web address, but I ask you to wait until the show is over before you go listen to this or watch this video. In fact, you're going to have to give your undivided attention to this video because there is quite a bit of silent script text on the screen in between various clips. And you won't hear a voice. You've got to read it. You've got to keep your attention focused on it. But when you do, you'll be glad that you did, because what is written is clearly pointing out some factual information that you will then see either supported or contradicted in the statements made by the individual featured in the video. I'm going to give the web address out. You can type into a URL and under any browser, the letters www.vidler, now this is spelled vidler.com/explore/citizen slim. Now, citizen is capitalized and slim is capitalized, just the first letter of each word. citizen slim/videos/16.813. Okay, I'll give you that whole thing in one steady stream now. www.vidler.com/explore/citizen slim. Again, citizen and slim are each capitalized at the beginning of each word. No space. /videos/16.813. This is an expose on Barack Obama. And what is interesting is you will hear Barack Obama constantly contradict his statements. You will hear him make a reference to his Muslim religion. Now, I'm not speaking out against Muslims, but decide what it is. If you're going to tell the world your religion, stick to it. Tell the truth. And he had a major Freudian slip. And actually, the interviewer on television made the correction for him. And then he tried to explain it away. And if you, any of you who know how to read body language and syntax, can tell that he was caught in a lie as he tries to explain the meaning of what he said. Now, this video is in many ways shocking because it's going to reveal much, much more than you have heard in mainstream media, yet there is some mainstream clips inserted. And some are from CNN, some are from Fox News, and you know, the mainstream, the major networks. And there is definitely something to consider, those of you who have not voted. And there's an underlying message in this video, and the video and the message are supported by Barack Obama's own statements and those of his followers and his associates. And if you can watch this video and see America moving to brighter days, then I think it's time for the rest of us to leave this planet. That said, I'd like to bring on tonight's guest. He himself is an excellent researcher. He's a metaphysical scientist. He is a journalist. He is a web host or a webmaster, we could say, of one of the most successful websites in the whole world. And he's become a good friend and actually someone with whom I will be collaborating on a number of pieces in the near future. He's been on every Thursday this month of October in 2008. My good friend, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Thank you, Don. Great to be with you again.
Well, you got to hear a little bit about this video, and I guarantee you it's a great encapsulation of all the contradictions that we have found in Barack Obama's biography, his autobiography, all the claims that he makes in his political speeches. And in fact, you sent me a picture of Barack Obama, again, giving that satanic hand signal at a public event.
Yep, just this evening I received an email from a fellow in who was part of the, I guess, the production crew covering a Barack Obama rally in Indiana. I don't remember. I don't recall what town in Indiana, but he wanted me to see a few shots that were taken of the event. And in at least one of the photos, Barack is holding up the horned hand signal, which is, you know, the satanic hand sign. And it's the first time that I've seen him in a public photo at a rally like that, holding up the satanic hand sign. So I was amazed. I didn't think he would do that in public. But as you mentioned to me earlier, they're getting extremely brazen about, you know, flaunting it. And of course, Clinton, both Bill and Hillary, have done it in public, as well as George Bush and his family, etc. But I just didn't expect it from Obama prior to the election. So that is a sure sign that, you know, he's totally confident of a victory.
Yeah, well, we've also explored other avenues of his heritage beyond what the media has reported, so it shouldn't come as any kind of surprise to you or me or anyone that knows what we're talking about.
No, we know he's part of the club, and I'm just slightly surprised that he's so reckless as to do that before the election. That's where the ego or hubris or swelling confidence are kicking in, and I guess he just feels completely insulated from it costing him, and he's willing to do it. So I'm just I'm still amazed. I mean, I wonder if the majority of people who see that understand the significance of the sign, or are they thinking it's Texas Longhorns?
Yeah. Well, that's the excuse that the Bush family gave. You know, they're no more fans of the Texas Longhorns than they are of Barack Obama.
Yeah, yeah. So, exactly. But you know, it's done so often by a lot of well-known personalities. I see night show hosts like Jay Leno. Who's the guy who was after Conan O'Brien? His name slips my mind. But I'll see most of the late night TV show hosts do it from time to time. And when they have rock, usually heavy metal type rock bands, musical guests, you'll see it there a lot. You'll see it quite often. You see it at sports events when you're watching football and they're zooming in on the fans. Very often the fans, when they know the camera's on them, will flash. So I don't know if in all cases those people understand it's the satanic hand sign, or they're just thinking it's a hip way to, you know, do the V for Victory sign. I do know that we're seeing tapes of shows from Japan, and not always, but sometimes young people at sporting types events will flash it. I don't think those people know. I think they just think it's a cool version of the peace sign. Because usually Japanese youth, at the very least, are not hip to the whole subject of Satanism. But as Henry Makau mentioned, though, in an article that he put up 6 or 7 or 8 weeks ago, I can't remember exactly, he did allude to the use of the satanic hand sign, and even those many people who use it unknowingly, at least don't understand the significance of it, they still assist the dark side, because that symbol reinforces the bonding
of the subconscious acceptance of it too.
The subconscious, yeah. Right. That's what he was sort of alluding to. So it's better to talk about it and tell people that's what that is, what the sign is.
Well, it's a very unnatural way to hold your fingers, to curl the two middle fingers in with the thumb holding them down while you put your index and little pinky fingers out, making the sign of, it symbolizes Satan's horns. That's why they do it.
Right, yeah. Specifically, they call it the goats of Mendez.
Yes.
It's also referred to as Baphomet. It's to visually symbolize the goat, which is a symbol for Satan, and it's used in all satanic rituals. If anyone has seen either photos or videos of satanic rituals, it's the hand sign they flash throughout the ceremony. It's their main deal.
Now, you mentioned Dr. Henry Makau. Several months ago, he published, I think it was in a piece. Actually, it wasn't even an article. He just said the Clinton satanic symbols or something, and Hillary Clinton was still in the running, and she was at a rally. I don't know where it was. It may have been California. They had this huge American flag on a wall in the side of this venue, a huge, huge auditorium, all lit up, loaded with people, and they took pictures both from the front, a stage front, and the rear of the stage, from behind where Bill and Chelsea and Hillary were standing.
Yes.
And from this rear shot, you could see on the left side of the auditorium, looking from the stage out at the audience, the American flag draped all the way across this wall. It was a huge flag. And the stars were upside down. And when you take a star and turn it upside down, instead of having one point at the top, it has two when you flip it over. Every single star on that flag was upside down.
Wow.
And now Dr. Henry Makau, actually published that photo. And with it, he showed Chelsea wearing a necklace or a pendant, and it was an upside down or an inverted cross. Mm-hmm. And Bill Clinton had a brooch on his tuxedo, which was the symbol for Osiris.
Wow.
There was these photos were replete with satanic symbols. Of course, one of the front photos also showed them all giving the sign of Satan with their hands.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
These are the people that the public in America revere.
Yeah, I'll have to look for those. I didn't catch that at all. That's stunning, though, because as you correctly say, when the five-pointed star is it's a pentagram. It's been co-opted, if you will, by the Illuminati as any symbol, at least this is my belief, any symbol in and of itself has the capacity to be neutral, but in the case of the Pentagram particularly, the dark side has somewhat co-opted it, and if they want to, this is the reason why you see the five-pointed star in as a background symbol in many, many areas. For instance, the U.S. Army, they use this five-pointed star on the side of their jeeps or their tanks or wherever. Macy's Department Store, five-pointed red star. Just look at any one of their commercials. That five-pointed star is the central focus of their logo.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a satanic ritual in which a five-pointed star is drawn or painted on the floor, and they put a circle around the outside of it, you know, that's they do a satanic ritual within that circle. And when Arizona Wilder, for instance, used to be function as what was called the mother goddess in the years that she was involved in satanic rituals with very high-end members of the Illuminati, she was standing inside a five-pointed pentagram with a circle around it, and she was able to, I mean, that's what she was trained to do, of course, to bring into third dimension these, what she called the old ones, or what the Illuminati calls the old ones, which are really nasty, demonic entities that are working with the Illuminati. They provide information, and they're forced to appear in this circle, and they can't leave the circle, so, which is that they would very much like to do, but the magic that's the energy that's there somehow locks them within the circle. And they're required to reveal information to the questions from the Illuminati participants at the ritual. And anytime you see, for instance, sometimes we see videos from Japan of magic shows, and some of these, there's one individual in particular who's become very popular in Japan in the last 3 to 4 years. He goes by the name Cyril. Now, that name itself, it has a satanic message to it. I don't know his true name. He just uses the name Cyril. He's a young American, and he's absolutely blowing the Japanese away with his magic. He does phenomenal things, but in many cases, what he's doing on video there that we're watching, it's not illusion. It is black magic. He is a black magician. There's no question about it. And when he does something that requires a great deal of, let's say, super natural events to take place, he will draw the five-pointed pentagram on the ground, put a circle around it, and then whoever he's working with, let's say he's going to elevate a woman, which I've seen him do, he'll have her lay within the pentagram. So that people should be aware of that it's telegraphing this notion of solidarity among these various facades that the Illuminati is behind. And the five-pointed star used on the flag, when it's reversed, so that two points are upwards and one point is downwards, that's another common way to symbolize the goat of Mendez. And very often you'll see the goat superimposed on that upside-down pentagram.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just looked up the article. I do have it. I got it from Rents.com. And it's called Clinton's Satanic Display, Upside Down Cross, Stars, Osiris Logo. And this actually, I was off on the date. It was the 26th of January of this year. So it's been out there for over 10 months now. But you can go to rents.com, and it's amazing that no one in this place noticed the flag.
Yes, very good.
It's just amazing. I mean, these people are spellbound. Hillary's got her hand up in the air. Bill's got his hand over his mouth. And this huge American flag with upside down stars on it. No one noticed that. It's mind blowing. or is it? I guess we should expect that at this point.
Yeah, we expect it, now more than ever. I just hope more people, catch on. I just got a very nice email from a man in Australia tonight. He said he just caught on to the 9/11 game 2 months ago, and he's been reading a great deal at my website and asked me a number of questions about the global conspiracy, and I responded to him and just put the letter up on my website, and I made a reference to the newest Zeitgeist movie that's being distributed on the internet, and many people are talking about it with the same sort of excitement that I heard people gush about the first Zeitgeist movie. And I mentioned to this fellow that that both Zeitgeist 1 and the addendum are in fact Illuminati deception vehicles, and you've got to be very careful and discerning to see the game that's going on with both of them. I wrote something about Zeitgeist, the first one that came out within a month or two of it being out, and then I elaborated in other essays. Henry Makow did a very good essay about Zeitgeist a few months after my first essay on it, or maybe it was a year or so later, but his piece was very well done. And the second one, I think I'll be doing a piece on it as well, but they're very slick, and and people just don't understand how masterful the Illuminati is in the game of deception. Most people are very excited and think this is just a great film and a great revelation. There's a game going on here, and I'm gonna write about it in greater length soon.
Yeah, you know, the intro, for those that haven't seen Zeitgeist, and I mean, the literal translation in German is Time Ghost.
Yeah.
Zeit is time, and Ghost is, or Geist is ghost.
Yeah.
There's a reference right in at the very outset of the film that is showing all these religious figures that are born on December 25th, and they quote Jesus' birthday. Jesus the Christ was also born on December 25th. Well, that in and of itself is a deception and should disqualify the whole thing right there, the point that they're trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
That day represents something very different from the point that they're trying to make. And yet, it's even a date that appears in my Obama article.
Yes.
And you recall what that is.
Yes.
Here we have someone that is basically condoning abortions, and, you know, I uncovered what absolutely appears to be a satanic sacrifice, and there should be a murder investigation for this.
Yep.
Now, interesting fact, I got an email from someone very well-meaning, told me that they looked up all of the Social Security numbers and the issues of when all of Obama's family members passed away, and if I really want to find the correct information, just go to Ancestry.com. So I said, well, thank you very much. I guess that totally debunks my notion of CIA spooks.
Right.
And someone should have told that to Otto Skorzeny.
Yes, right.
it it never ceases to amaze me. And I, you know, I was polite. I referenced the fact that either I was not clear enough in my article, or the sender of this message to me was a bit confused about what I was getting at. What I'm saying here is they fake these people's deaths so that they can move them out of the way to do other business, and then they can't be questioned.
Yep.
When you can't question someone and put them on the spot, it's easier to obfuscate the truth. Now, whether you want to consider that a true statement or not, just compare that to the fact that Obama still has not produced a valid certificate of live birth.
Right.
In fact, you sent me a newspaper article, a so-called newspaper article from Hawaii, where it's quite obvious that someone did an even poorer job of fudging a newspaper birth announcement in that Hawaiian paper, yes, where the vertical lines are completely square with my computer screen, although the paper is sitting at somewhat of an angle to the right.
Right.
I don't know if it's 10 degrees turned toward the right. That might be an educated guess. But all the text is level, and the line, the vertical line is a little bit off of a vertical. It's not straight up and down. And the horizontal lines are even more crooked than the text.
Yes.
And the page.
Right.
So it's quite obvious that this whole newspaper page that this information was located on was just fabricated and put out there. And then I, like a few other people that I saw on the internet, checked the age or the existence of the address, and found out that it didn't exist before the early 70s. So, again, we have another fictitious birthplace and okay, now a fictitious house.
Okay. So the address you're referring to is the supposed hospital address or the
No,
address
that's,
of
that's
the house?
They gave the address of Mr. and Mrs. Barack H. Obama is how it was.
And that address in Hawaii did not exist in 1961.
That's correct.
Okay.
Now, that is pertinent here if we were to go into a discussion about McCain, who claimed that he was born at the Kokosolo Naval Base Hospital. That wasn't built even 5 years after he was born.
Right.
And I know that because I found the presidential executive order from Franklin Delano Roosevelt instructing the engineers to go lay the boundary, acquire the property so they could begin laying the boundary to build the hospital. And it took about 2 years to build the hospital. That order was issued on December 17th, 1941.
Wow.
The initial survey
to lay the boundary was in
41. To lay the boundary, not even start building the hospital. And he instructed them, lease the land, buy the land, do whatever you have to do. Okay, so they didn't even, the United States didn't even lease the land at that time in 1941, let alone 1936. So his story is nothing but a story as well.
Right. So the hospital, I just want to clarify for people listening to this tape, the hospital that John McCain claims he was born in Panama, did not exist in the year 1936 when he claimed to have been born in that hospital.
Yes, he claims
in fact the hospital
wasn't
built to perhaps 43 or 44.
We'll take a guess and say around 43. Maybe they said it took 2 years to build.
Yeah, so if they're laying the boundaries in 41, yeah, 2 years to build, that brings us to 43. So here we have
Or possibly 44, because this order came out on December 17th, and they still had to go out and acquire the land. That may have taken weeks or months.
Yes, right. So maybe it wasn't into 44 that they actually commissioned it and put it in operation. And I have mentioned it in a few of the places here and there when talking about your expose about John McCain that one of the many important items that you dug up was just that, that McCain claims he's eligible to run for president because he was born in a hospital, he claims, in Panama in 1936. Well, even if the hospital was there, which it wasn't, I don't believe he's eligible. If the Constitution says on U.S. soil, it means native-born on U.S. soil.
Mm-hmm.
And Panama was never one of the, you know, United States possessions or a state. So I know Congress had, not Congress, but at least the Senate, had some sort of meeting on that when McCain was first running and said, oh, no, it's okay. No, it's not okay. It's not constitutionally valid at all. They're just whitewashing it. They're just rolling right over it. They're just steamrolling over the issue and saying, oh, this isn't an issue. Let's just move on. It's incredible. But you've got a double-barreled objection here.
Absolutely. That's why I brought it up. It's not just about Obama. It's about McCain as well. I'm getting confused now. We've got Osama bin Laden, Obama, Joe Biden, and his real name is McCann on top of it. You know, this name McCain was just a fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and it's worth mentioning this because anybody that doubts what I'm saying, I encourage you to go to my website, directlightproductions.com, click on articles, scroll down to the first article that says Three Stooges Go to Washington, Part 1. That's the part about John McCain's so-called grandfather and father. And there, you'll see that right on the information on the website at the Arlington what you would call the Arlington Cemetery website. There's a tribute to all the members of the family on separate pages. You enter their name in the search feature on that website, and it'll bring up his so-called grandmother. No one can find any history, I certainly couldn't, of her other than what they published through the military. You can't find Social Security numbers for any of the people in that family. And her birth date and her death date are different on the tombstone than every other publication of that information.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, how did that guy get it so wrong?
Yes, exactly.
You know, he's memorializing this person, and she's buried at Arlington National Cemetery as if that makes it, you know, a patriotic event,
mm-hmm.
and it legitimizes it further.
Yep.
You know, the name showed up on shipping lists at the time he was supposedly at Annapolis, and I'm speaking about John Sidney McCain Sr., although his father's name was John Sidney McCain, seems like he would be Junior.
Right.
No one argues that logic for some reason. We can't seem to wrap our minds around the fact that the first person with the name is usually senior when he names his son after himself.
Yes, yes.
Or he calls himself the first and the next one is called the second. It's a matter of choice or preference. But this is the first John McCain because he was the first John McCann.
Right.
Simple as that. Now, what's interesting is that his so-called son, who would be the father of John McCain, was going by the name Albert McCann on the ships. And when John McCann stopped sailing across the ocean on these ships commissioned, actually owned by Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt owned the ships that these British and Russian and German and virtually every nationality you can think of except American were sailing on. these merchant ships.
Right.
And when he stopped sailing on that ship, all of a sudden he appears as an officer in the U.S. Navy.
I wanted to ask you, you've studied the photos more intensely than I have, and this just occurred to me, though. Does the similarity between the physical appearance of John McCain, the current John McCain, does it seem to match the one of his father, the one right after World War II in 44, 45, standing on the deck of the ship with his father?
He looks more like the King of England.
I've never thought about that, but I'm just wondering if the physical appearance of this John McCain matches that of his father.
You have to really stretch your imagination on that one, Ken. I don't even need to look at it. I looked at it for months, and he looks more, although the King of England had a beard, you see the more rounded features. Definitely doesn't look like his grandfather, and it's when you see someone in a naval uniform, you're assuming that they're father and son because of that uniform. That's the common denominator there.
Yes.
But I didn't get the feeling. I actually came to the conclusion that Senior and Junior were actually brothers. Okay, and I'm pretty certain I stated that in the article. Now, what's interesting is, going back to Obama, I made some rather bold conclusions, and I put them in writing, and I've been talking about them quite a bit on the show. And the information that's coming out now, especially this film, remember I said Obama was born in Indonesia?
Yes.
That claim is made in this film.
Oh, my goodness. It's
pretty interesting, and I knew that there was a tie. Actually, Obama, according to this film, changed his name when he was 19 years old, when he went to Africa. That means he went to Africa in 1980. Now, I know, and I wrote about this in the article, that he was in Africa, we know, at least by 1981. So that's pretty close information. You see, there's a lot of information coming out substantiating the conclusions I came to. I could still be writing this article. There's just so much to uncover. In fact, I have a piece coming out soon that I sort of hinted to you that's going to show folks where Stan Leanne went to school. I actually found the school where she went, in Oklahoma. And I made the comment last night or the night before that Dorothy has Kansas still. It belongs to Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. And we're going to have to figure out another story for Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really have come across some amazing discoveries, and you've having put out your first two-part on Obama, some people brought some stuff to your attention that's even making the story more phenomenal, and that's going to be pretty exciting when you come up with that. Only people who actually take the time to read your article carefully and digest it. The story is not a simple one. You have to pay attention and follow the ball. But what you've discovered is that the information which Barack and his promoters and his website, etc., and his official bio are not true at all. Much of it is a confabulation, and the whereabouts of his mother and his supposed father, and especially his mother's parents are not what the official biographers have been saying. You've been finding them in different locations, and it looks like they're not at all the all-American mom and pop apple pie couple that the Obama camp would have us believe.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know what just struck me while you were saying that, Ken? See how psychic you are tonight. I'm asking that rhetorically to yeah. introduce this statement. This is a fraud perpetrated on the American people, on the political system, on our justice system, on our legal system. In fact, you know, he has no right, based upon his ineligibility to be, to even run for the presidency or to become the president. And, yeah. and he's a senator. He's a United States senator. Isn't that a fraud? Isn't that the same fraud there?
Of course. You can, in every office he's held now, he's committed a felony because he's impersonating a United States citizen. He's an illegal alien, at least, you know, legally. He's illegal. So, of course, you can't hold public office when you're not even a citizen. And sure, if there was any reality to the justice system, if we actually had someone in the Justice Department who was interested in justice, of course, if simply ordinary civilians just poking around in the internet can find out Obama is not a legitimate citizen, can't the Justice Department do that? Can't the FBI do that? Of course they can. They are as aware as we are that the guy's a fraud, but they're under control of the Illuminati. They're not interested in exposing the main guy who they want to front as president of the United States as they continue to dismantle and destroy this country from within. So they're not going to do that, but it'd be nice if enough citizens could read and hear and see the evidence that you and others have put together that clearly show that Obama is an infiltrator. He is not an American citizen. And people have to take off the rose-colored glasses. I just got an email from a woman who was part of the Educate Yourself chat forum, and she said she wanted to unsubscribe from the forum because she just can't take all the racist remarks about Obama from the GOP trolls on that forum. And I told her there can't be many GOP trolls because I just don't have the sort of website that, you know, GOP ideologues are interested in reading. I have, if anything, a more of a liberal, shall we say, bias to the website. But she's clearly offended and upset because she's seeing people at that forum post so many articles that are critical of Obama and doing what we're talking about here, exposing him as a fraud. And this is upsetting her because she clearly believes he's a good guy, and she's probably, I don't know her color, but she might be a black person, and therefore she has an additional investment in seeing him become president based on his color, I suppose. And of course she's sincere. I have no doubt about it that she believes that these criticisms of Obama's, from her perspective at least, she probably looks at it as racism. That's why she attached that word to it. rather than an expose of a fraud. And
you know, that may be a very valid point. You know, I'm a white man. I think most of my listening audience knows that. They've seen my photograph on the BBS site or on my own website or somewhere on the internet. And I have a white president. And it's not afforded me or any other white people I know any special privilege. I'm speaking about the regular person out there. I'm not talking about the corporate elitists and the people that participate in the secret societies and kowtow to the Illuminati or whatever else you want to call them. It's just a name. The Brotherhood, they like to call themselves the Great White Brotherhood, in fact.
Yeah.
And so why would one assume that to have a black president, even though it's quite clear that he's got Arab blood in him, and I'm not saying he's following a religion and that gives him Arab blood, he's got Arab blood. And it's known all over the world. Even people in Kenya say that.
Yes.
They certainly claim that in Indonesia.
Right. He has, right. What you're saying is he has physical characteristics that are more, appear more like Indonesian Arab folks.
Yes, and every other aspect of what he believes in and what he propounds is basically along the same lines.
Yep.
His religion, the people he hangs out with, even his name is honoring something other than being an African. The origin of his name even isn't African.
Yeah,
now, why would if he was born as Barry Satoru, why would he have to change his name to an African name? Is that to legitimize him as an African American? And okay, we've got George Bush or Bill Clinton. Assuming that one of our presidents was born in the United States, it's never been any special advantage to me or any of the white people I know out there because the president has white skin. These guys have a totally different agenda.
Yeah, of course. I think the folks who are rooting for Obama and wish to project the fantasy that he's a great guy, and I just also posted another response to another fellow who had sent me an email in which he was forwarding me a truly syrupy and completely unbelievable, honorary tribute to Obama, and this fellow gave it the title that Obama is going to be the greatest and most loved president ever. Or a title that's very close to that. And when you read it, you have this man who claims to be a former Republican, a former Marine, who is just totally taken with Obama, and he's just so sure this is going to be the finest president we've ever had in the history of the country, and he just goes on and on and on. It's absurd. It's so ridiculous. It's just absurd. But, that was posted to the Ariana Huffington Post on the internet, and this fellow sent it to me, thought it was well written and beautifully done, etc. And I replied to him with a rather lengthy reply and says that those who, you know, are willing to just cave in to this swooning over Obama need to read the facts and to stop allowing an emotional longing, at least in the case of black people in America who are rooting for Obama because, you know, he is part Negro. This is not a reason to elect a president, no more than it is a reason to elect a woman as president merely because she's a woman. This is not good. But in Obama's case, you just can't ignore all the mountains of information that has surfaced about Obama that clearly shows that he was groomed for the job. The man in Kenya was probably not his father, because physically there's too much of a gap between Barack Obama's appearance and the father's appearance. The father is a very dark-skinned black man, very dark-skinned, and Obama is simply too light-skinned, and as you pointed out to me, something I hadn't noticed, but the color tone of Obama's lips match those folks in the Indonesia area. And I hadn't paid attention to that, but once you told me, I says, oh, yes, you're right. So, and then physically, Obama's quite tall, and his white mother, assuming Stanley Ann Dunham was his true mother, and the man, Barack Obama Sr., the black man from Kenya, who is claimed to be his father, they're both quite short. You know, it's kind of odd. There is no structural resemblance between Obama Sr. and Barack Obama. He doesn't have the same face. He doesn't have the same skull structure. And he's much taller. I mean, it gets pretty suspicious.
There were even the events that occurred when Stan and Leanne supposedly went to Seattle to visit her schoolmates just shortly after giving birth to this baby, and she feeds the baby and asks her friend to change the diaper.
Yeah.
Now
that's real odd for a new mother to do that with a new baby. That's real, real odd.
Mm-hmm.
I was
just going to say, Ken, that to me it seemed like she was coming back from Indonesia with this baby. In other words, she was in transit. And quite possibly her mother had business to take care of. We shouldn't lose sight of the fact that here's this destitute girl. She's being supported by her parents, but she's conveniently making a sort of a jaunt, a vacation trip to go visit school friends with this baby.
Right.
It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, it doesn't, it doesn't. Yep, like you said, what they portray in the official story, and yet when you look at other evidence, it doesn't add up. It seems anyone who takes the time to study the information, what we're having here, though, in the case of this man who sent me that email a couple of days ago, who thought the Obama fluff piece was wonderful. This is an unwillingness to look at the evidence. They've too many people, and this is a huge mistake. Too many people, particularly, well, obviously, people on the left, liberals, and especially, I'm assuming, black people, are willing to just accept him as the next John Kennedy, if you will. They certainly want to hang that kind of reverential laurels around his shoulder, and it's often been said by pundits that, you know, they almost want to portray this messianic aura about him. This is all manufactured. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, when you see that video that I mentioned, you're going to see where those original references came from. Ken, we got to take a quick break here. We're at the top of our second hour, and we'll be right back. Folks, you're listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest, Ken Adachi, and I will be right back. Don't go away. More to come.
Of the 3 million-plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from HempUSA.org.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to Idaho-Observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Years ago when I was 23, I was married to a widow who was pretty as could be. This widow had a grown-up daughter who had hair of red. My father fell in love with her and soon they two were wed. This made my dad my son-in-law and changed my very life. For my daughter was my mother 'cause she was my father's wife. To complicate the matter, even though it brought me joy, I soon became the father of a bouncing baby boy. My little baby then became a brother-in-law to Dad, and so became my uncle, though it made me very sad. For if he was my uncle, then that also made him brother to the widow's grown-up daughter, who of course was my stepmother. I'm my own grandpa. I'm my own grandpa. It sounds funny, I know, but it really is so. Oh, I'm my own grandpa. My father's wife then had a son who kept him on the run, and he became my grandchild because he was my daughter's son. My wife is now my mother's mother, and it makes me blue, because although she is my wife, she's my grandmother too. If my wife is my grandmother, then I am her grandchild, and every time I think of it, it nearly drives me wild.
This has got to be the strangest thing I ever saw.
As husband of my grandmother, I am my own grandpa. I'm my own grandpa. Everybody! I'm my own grandpa. It's so funny, I know, but it really is so. Hey! I'm my own grandpa.
Welcome back to Evident Footprints on this Thursday night or a Friday morning. And our special guest, Ken Adachi. Ken, I'm my own grandpa. Isn't that a hilarious song?
That's funny. I do recall hearing that song many, many, many years ago. It was kind of a novelty tune. My guess is I think it perhaps even came back, you know, originated in the 20s or 30s. But I do remember at family parties, get-togethers. I had a cousin who was just a very good guitar player and singer, and I was just a young kid. I just can't remember with, but he did that one, and he made everyone roar with laughter. That's really a cute tune.
And you know what? It's like what we're talking about tonight. Either case.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Actually, it makes more sense than what we're witnessing today, I should say.
It does.
That might be more accurate.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's an appropriate anthem for this topic.
Yes.
To make it the official anthem of the Three Stooges Go to Washington piece.
Yes, right. Yep. Yep. It is really cute. So we were talking about the idea, though, of people in the country who are embracing Barack Obama because they truly believe he's the best deal, or in more than one case I've heard people say, well, he's the lesser of the two evils. And I need to emphasize that McCain and Obama are two sides of the same coin. They will follow the behind-the-scene Illuminati manipulators just as closely as George Bush did. So there will be no change in the course of the pursuit of war in the Middle East. And it's so clear. It's not as if it's hard to figure this out. Obama, while many people project on him the hope of being a peace candidate, he can say words till he's blue in the face. What counts is, what does he actually do? And what he actually has done is that while initially, when it served him politically to say, well, we're going to pull out of Iraq, and Afghanistan in so many months, in the early part of his campaigning during the primary season, after he secured the Democratic primary, then he began to change that message. And it became more of a, and as he, you know, went into the campaign against McCain, it became more of a deal, well, we're going to shift more troops into Afghanistan. Well, that's a big change from we're going to pull the troops out. I mean, that's a big change. And it's not, however, unexpected of him, because as you point out in this, as you mentioned, which you see in this video, just follow Obama's campaign, his political career carefully. What he says on stage and what he's doing when he's voting as a U.S. senator are frequently not the same thing. The man waffles, flips, lies, exaggerates. He's completely untrustworthy. There's nothing that he says that can be relied upon. And even before he's elected, he's making it clear that he's going to keep on pushing forward with the expansion of war in Afghanistan. You can see now they've making incursions into Pakistan. They've already had a number of bombing missiles and bombing runs against Pakistan. They're going to attack Syria. That's the other. They just had an attack against Syria a day or two ago. They're going to expand the war in the Middle East to include Pakistan, Syria, and, of course, ultimately Iran. Not that I really believe Iran is not part of the Illuminati structure. They are. The fellow who's running that country is as much in bed with the Illuminati as George Bush is. But he's playing a role, as did the real Saddam Hussein, the one who survived and is still very much alive somewhere, either on or off this planet. They're playing roles, and I just need to emphasize that at least people who are not completely overwhelmed by leftist propaganda about Obama, you need to look at the facts. Your choice is not between McCain and Obama. I know you'd never know it from the media, but there's three other people who are on the ballot for president.
Mm-hmm.
And Ralph Nader has been around a long time. He's run for president on more than one occasion. And Cynthia McKinney, he's the representative from Georgia, and Chuck Baldwin. I have my preference of those three, but any one of them is a billion to one better choice than Obama or McCain. Now, I know none of those three will win, but if I'm going to take the trouble to go into a voting booth on election day, I'm certainly not going to vote for Obama or McCain. That's insane. At least register a protest vote by voting for one of the three other candidates. And this is something that I noticed that people like my friend who sent me the letter who told me that, well, he thought Obama was the lesser of the two evils. He was less pernicious. He's got it in his mind there's only two people who are going to be on the ballot. There's five people on the ballot. And mm-hmm. it's amazing how so many people aren't even cognizant of that.
Well, how do these people come to these conclusions? That's what gets me, because now I'm not asking anyone to believe.
Because the media never mentions Nader or McKinney or Chuck Baldwin as being on the presidential ballot this November. They never, ever say it. They, of course, we only saw two people in the debates. So it's just brainwashing.
I mean, I understand that, but I'm saying how do they come to this conclusion he's the lesser of two evils, if you're just considering McCain and Obama as
I understand that. No, I understand that. If I had to step back and just say, who do I think is going to cause greater strife, greater loss of life, greater acceleration of the madness agenda, I'd say McCain, if I had to judge. I'd say McCain is going to put us in the whirlwind faster than Obama. But ultimately, they're both serving the same master. We're going to arrive at the same place. But I think, McCain will just get us there in overdrive. The guy's nuts. The guy's a maniac. I mean, now, this guy it was bad enough having him as senator. Good Lord. Have this nutcase in charge of the government as president? Oh, heaven help us.
Well, we've been saying the Illuminati, and they themselves and their, the power structure within the Illuminati has made the elitists who are part of the Illuminati here in the United States, the Rockefellers, Vanderbilts, DuPonts, it used to be the Astors at one time, and I wrote about this in part 3
names families,
the Paysers who became George Bayshore in North Carolina, and then Daniel Payser, who was Louis, the heir apparent to the throne. They were sent here as managers, let's say, or the main agents on at the behest of King George III. Now, all these guys that everybody's afraid of, now it's David Rockefeller. Before it was John D. and Frank, and through time the heirs have taken over everything, but they've become every bit or more evil than their predecessors.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that David Rockefeller is any less evil than John D. Rockefeller was. The misperception that people have about how powerful these people are is indicative when you really do the research and discover who controlled them, who gave them the opportunities to be part of this elite structure when they founded the Federal Reserve. And G. Edward Griffin wrote about that in The Creature from Jekyll Island. Yet we had the Virginia Company, we had the New England Company, and then we have, and look at all the universities in New England that are controlled by that mechanism. Then we had in considering who the bankers were, the secret bankers that funded the central banks in New York from overseas, you have to consider that there's someone controlling them also. And that's the real secret. If I were to write a book about that, I would call it The Real Secret. Not just The Secret, because they themselves are being controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And that opens up a whole new can of worms. But it gets right to the heart of all the problems on this planet. Yeah. And so few people are willing to discuss that.
Yes, well, we can branch into that area. I would just like to take a few minutes, though, to refer to the so-called leftist alternative media in the country. I mentioned this to you this morning, and
mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we can do that, and as long as you promise, we'll come back to this because
okay, we'll do. So the first group we talked about earlier, who are naively ascribing trust and wonderful character assessments to Obama, which he doesn't deserve, are doing so. Why? Well, because he's a charismatic speaker. He's dynamic. He certainly sounds self-assured. He's almost glib. He's so self-assured. And so a lot of people are charmed by that, and they don't understand that he's putting on a show, that there is no substance to any of his statements, and that what he's doing is making very calculated references to words and phrases that he probably was trained to say.
There's subliminal messages intended.
There's subliminal messages, and people can train in this. It's called motivational speaking, and there's subsets within this this art that they refer to as neuro-linguistic programming. And you and I recently talked about a week or so ago, there was a lengthy 60-page article that was put up on the internet that addressed this very issue of is Barack in fact using these techniques to subliminally influence the audience, and the author refers to it as hypnosis. And in fact, it is a type of hypnosis, because I already read about it and considered it when I wrote an article a few years ago called British Israel. And I had done some research on the internet, and I was particularly interested in carefully studying the techniques that TV evangelical preachers use to draw in their audience, to get the audience nodding in agreement with them, and to get the audience to completely bond with the message that they were delivering. And very typically, when the audience is, let's say, hooked or convinced, you see visual signs of it. For instance, people very often in this kind of evangelical church setting, if you will, people's hands go in the air and they wave their arms back and forth, and they'll very often close their eyes and roll their head back and forth. Typically, music is going on, so you could say, well, they're just responding to the music. Okay, that's true. But it's part of a package. They're being led into an emotional state, which is somewhat trance-like. Now, I'm sure many people don't like to hear that, particularly if they have done it themselves, but it is a form of trance hypnosis. When your guard is down, when you're super relaxed, when you feel almost euphoric, you're ripe for programming. What I mean by programming is that I can inculcate a belief into the deepest center of your subconscious mind
when you are in that state of relaxation. That is the purpose that evangelical preachers employ, the music, the showy flamboyant stagings of, demonstrations, I should say, of healing up on the stage, the music, the constant repetition, talking about salvation in Jesus' name, blah, blah, blah. These are techniques that are being used to pull the person into this trance-like state in which they are easily converted. And that's why they call it conversion hypnosis. So that when you leave the church, et cetera, now you're a believer. You look forward to coming back, you know, to the next day or the next week or whenever they have their services, because you want to relive that experience. You presume or think or assume it's some sort of ecstatic, reverential state. Now, I'm not saying there is no spiritual component to it, but what I am saying is that the guy up on the stage and the producers of the music, the lighting, etc., are intentionally doing this to manipulate your emotions. That's what I'm saying. And Barack Obama in his presentations are using words, gesture, phrases, and repeated ideas, which we, or words or phrases, we can call them mantras, that are having a hypnotic effect on the people in the audience. And if they find themselves nodding or if their hands shoot in the air and they're waving back and forth, I mean, I don't know if that occurs at Obama get-togethers or not, but it's a tip-off that conversion hypnosis is being practiced on them and they don't know it.
Even so Bill then, Clinton... Ken, even Bill Clinton, when he made his assertion to the American public on television, said, "I did not have any," started pointing his index finger in our faces,
right. Right.
"I did not have sex with that woman."
Mm-hmm.
You remember how he did that, that gesture?
Oh,
was,
yeah, very emphatically and very, let's say, determined, and so that if you weren't sure of your information, and that's what he's depending on. Bill Clinton often puts on a phony confident front.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen him in other
cases.
Especially
when he plays a saxophone.
Yeah. But I've seen him use that same technique in other cases in which he wants to, cow down someone in the audience, for instance, who's said something that's challenging to him or his cover story. He's tried that before, and it usually works for him. And that was one occasion, as you said, he looked right into the camera and pointed that index finger and very determined, like as if to say, I mean, they should have put a text printout below him, "I'm looking you straight in the eye, and I'm telling you." So,
mm-hmm.
Of course, he's lying through his teeth, but that's what liars, practice liars, and polished liars do. And Obama is a polished performer. I'm sure he's had a lot of weekend training from the time he started the primary campaign up to this point, because he's definitely more polished than he was in the earlier phases. And he's been cautioned to not be caught off guard in either appearance. For instance, you never see a cigarette in his mouth, well, the guy's a chain smoker. And he's very careful now to, you know, avoid anything that might be caught on film that could be used against him. But getting back to the people who are accepting him, they don't realize that how they're, if they listen to the whole event, and particularly if they attended it because they're they're a believer, you know, they're in his corner to begin with. And of course, you can easily be persuaded. He's worked at this. If he wasn't such a dynamic speaker, or perhaps if he wasn't programmed to be such a dynamic speaker, he might not be scoring as well as he is. Mm-hmm. But he's convincing people on nothing but motivational jingoism. And there's nothing of substance that a person using strictly an analytical approach or reviewing his record, what he says, what he does in his voting record, there is no reason to believe that he won't follow Illuminati orders to the nth degree. There's no reason to think that. And people are kidding themselves. They're sort of just wishful thinking, hoping that once he's president, then he's got to play the warmonger game, you know, in order to win over McCain. But once the election happens, he's going to do a 180. This is ridiculous. This is denial. This is self-delusion, I should say.
Ken, what do you think people, those followers are expecting him to do? We've heard these terms of Messiah and Savior. And when you see this movie that I referenced at the top of the first hour, you are going to understand where a lot of this came from. Just watching his associates, the people he has associated himself with historically, and really I see them all as handlers. You know, to be exposed to someone like Frank Marshall Davis as a young boy, and who's been identified as a communist, and then tell us, you know, in one sense, you know, he couldn't identify any of the people in his life by their real name, as if he was. It wasn't that he was protecting anyone; it was hiding things, you see.
Yeah, right.
And I'm quite disappointed that he didn't write about Larry Sinclair, because that was a significant few events in his life.
Yeah.
His sexual relations and his drug usage with him in a limousine and in a hotel.
There were other Larry Sinclairs. This is one who had the guts to come out, or was still alive to come out, let's put it that way.
Yeah, there are the three deaths at the church. There's the satanic baby sacrifice that I discovered.
Yeah.
And it's in the article. Anyone can look it up.
Yeah.
It's there to look up. Why deny it? Tell me who was living in Maryland by the name of Obama in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And you can presume that person was somehow involved in a murder of a baby.
Yeah, frankly, there's going to be two tiers of people listening to this who will react to the information in a much different way.
Mm-hmm.
One tier of people are going to be those who will go to your website, read the article carefully, and then it will start to register. I would say, though, there's another probably larger tier of people, and these are the typical left-leaning folks who are quick to accept them, who won't read your material. They simply won't read it because they're going to dismiss it as lies, or like this gal who sent me this email, racist fabrications, without actually reading it or examining it. That's going to be the majority of people, I'm afraid. And
who gives out the social security numbers, Ken? You know, it's in the social security death index.
Yes.
You know,
I understand. I just want to say that I'm sure the people who take the time and have the interest in examining your articles and others. I mean, there's a lot of heavy criticism about about Obama's background on the internet. I particularly am thrilled by your stuff because you've been, you know, letting me know about it as you discovered it. It's been fun to hear these discoveries as they came, and you've unearthed some very heavy-duty kinks in Obama's official story, which others haven't even come close to. But nevertheless, there have been others who've, let's say, looked at the straight story and found so many inconsistencies and falsities about Obama's activities, his parents' activities, name changes, where was he at a certain date, what was he doing, what did he say. There's just too much. So, but again, I'm though convinced that if you're of that intellectual bent, you might go there. But if you're not of the intellectual bent, but you're making your decision essentially based on an impression that you've acquired from television or from any of these speeches, then once you're a believer, then those folks will tend to have a type of emotional bonding. That's why I alluded to the idea of people being emotionally invested in Obama. Because once you've gone there, now you've got you're going to defend him like he's family almost, because once you've bonded on some level with him, if he's your guy, if you see him as the black underdog who, you know, for all of United States history has been, well, first a slave and then an underdog in society, and now, finally, in the year 2008, we're going to have our first black president. Well, you're now on an emotional surfboard, and you're riding that big, you know, that big curly wave, and you're having a ball. So it's going to be very hard to get kind of a sobering intellectual type reexamination of the whole thing. Most people who are riding that emotional wave will not look at the evidence you're presenting, because they're grooving on the euphoria, the fantasy of, oh my God, at last, one of our own is going to be president, and that's bad. That's real bad. But a lot of people will do that. I'm quite convinced of it. Now, the other people who are embracing Obama uncritically, I want to talk about, is our so-called left-leaning media. Now, I'm in Southern California. I live about an hour south of Los Angeles. And the biggest station, FM radio station, that carries this programming is called KPFK. And they're one of five Pacifica radio stations that are in other cities in America. There's one in Washington, there's one in New York, there's one in Texas, and there's another one somewhere else, I'm not sure, but there's five of them around the country.
And these are national public radio stations.
Right. And they are aligned with and working in I don't want to use the word cahoots, but they're working in tandem, let's put it that way, with NPR radio. Now, the shows that I'm referring to specifically are Amy Goodman, who's well-known many radio stations around the country with her show Democracy Now. And there's another one that follows Amy. It's a show with a woman called Sonali Kolhatkar, and the name of her show is Uprising. Now, all of the shows on KPFK from early morning, it begins, well, actually, the show begins with an all-Spanish kind of program, which I'm not at all happy with. I can sort of understand Spanish, and what they're saying is not good. But they come on from 5 to 6 on KPFK, and then Amy Goodman comes on for her first hour, and then Sonali Kolhatkar comes on. Another show comes on from 8 to 9, and then Amy Goodman repeats her show again from 9 to 10. And it's the two, Sonali Kolhatkar's show and Amy Goodman that I want to focus this conversation on. because Amy particularly has a very large audience. She does both an audio and a video feed, and she claims there are over 700 stations. Now, many of them are smaller university-type stations, maybe 1,000 or 2,000, 5,000 watts, but she is widely syndicated, and because of the Internet, she could be heard and read around the world. Much of what Amy Goodman says I find to be good information. Her reporting is in line with what I would have done given the same circumstances. However, where I strongly criticize her is that there are certain key issues which she is carrying water for the Illuminati. And so is Sonali Kolhatkar, but Sonali is doing it even to a more radical extreme. That's why I want to bring this up.
Mm-hmm.
Many people, I understand the leftist mentality because many of my own sentiments are along the same lines of people who call themselves, well, I don't know, they used to call themselves liberals and they stopped doing that. So the most common term that those folks apply to themselves, they like to call themselves progressive. That's the word that's in now. I'm not sure they even call themselves left as much, but they are on the left side of the spectrum. Progressive, that's the word they prefer to use. I have many views that are in line with people who call themselves progressive. I also have a number of views that match what people who call themselves conservatives believe in. When it comes to the leftist personality, I usually find people who are humane, concerned human beings. They very typically are not cold-hearted money grubbers who are interested in, you know, taking advantage of his fellow man so they could walk over them and make a lot of money at their expense. No. Most people on the left are interested in equality, justice, fair treatment for the little guy, and for government to do more to take care of the underprivileged and the poor than they, you know, than taking care of the fat cat. So I'm in agreement with all that. I think any reasonable person is. I came from a poor, lower, blue-collar, working-class background myself. I empathize with people who have it, who haven't made much money in life and, you know, don't. Most of the people I grew up with, they all rented, you know, apartments. We couldn't afford a home. So I emphasize with that class completely. So I know where the heart is. However, what I also know, though, is very typically, especially young people on the left, they glom onto idealistic notions as if it were reality, and it's not. So what manipulators like the Rockefellers have been doing for most of the 20th century is that they've created circumstances and power structures to create this, to help fuel the creation and expansion of communism. Most people don't know that, except if you're hip to the subject, you say, wait a minute, Rockefeller, major capitalist, communist, come on, it's an opposite. No. So if you study the data, you come to realize that the entire, funding and imposition of communist regimes was instigated by Wall Street bankers, by the Rockefellers, by the Rothschilds. They are the ones who arrange for people like Lenin and Trotsky to be slipped into Russia. They weren't Russians. They weren't native Russians. They were imported in there, and they got the money to fund the so-called Bolshevik Revolution from Wall Street bankers, Rockefellers and company. That's where the money came from. They funded, fueled, and created the communist governments that's, you know, began in 1917 in Russian, later in 1949 in China and communist Cuba, and every country in the world that's ever gone communist, it was due to the efforts of the Rockefeller family and the Rothschilds, because communism was needed to be created to create a conflict against another faction that is also created, funded, and put into position by the same group of people. It's called fascism. And the best example of that was the funding and elevation into power of Adolf Hitler in the 1930s, which resulted in World War II. So the average person, of course, doesn't learn this in school. They learn certain set of ideas and notions about what communism is and who the communists are. What is capitalism? Who are the capitalists? So they have all these divisions in their mind, but they don't understand that a huge game has been played for a few hundred years, and it started in 1776, at least as far as the United States is concerned, with a guy named Adam Weishaupt. And the idea is to create conflict, so naturally you need conflicting parties, and you get the parties to become embroiled in this conflict, and you make a lot of money by selling armaments to both sides of the conflict, and Civil War, the American Civil War, for instance, and then you clean up after the war. What I mean is clean up, you gather more power, and you gather more money in the wake of the conflict which you created. So that's what happened after the Civil War. And then another example of this created conflict was the stock market crash of 1929, intentionally put into motion, just like the Rothschilds did during the Napoleonic era. They manipulated the stock market, and he made a killing. And many of the manipulators made a killing. They acquired much more real estate property, particularly as a result of the stock market crash of 1929. And that's where real wealth is. It's in land, and it's in the minerals that are in the land, and it's not the paper that they call stock. The real value to these manipulators is, well, human beings too. Human beings provide work, energy, and labor is a type of capital. But then it's the earth itself. It's resources, and the real estate itself, that's real wealth. And these folks, these manipulators, have been gathering more and more into a smaller and smaller group of elite families' hands, and more of this wealth, land, resources, has been slipping out of the hands of ordinary folks.
Which is why we're in the financial dilemma that we're in right now.
Yes, right, right. And during the 1920s and 30s, for instance, even though much was lost by small-scale farmers, and many lost their farms during the Great Depression, nevertheless, a large number of people in this country lived on farms, owned farmland, and they worked their own farm, and they sold their produce and stock and livestock, etc., a very large proportion. And they wanted to, the Illuminati wanted to remove that independence and that ownership of that resource from those independents. So they, first they created the Great Depression, obviously, but what got us out of the Great Depression was World War II. Well, World War II was created because Hitler was funded and, was allowed to build up, secretly, the German armament during the 1930s, etc. All done because they knew if war would follow, because these people clean up after the war. They never die in the war, their children never die in the war, or at least rarely. There's once in a blue moon case. But, they really make a lot of money as a result of war, and they aggregate more power into smaller and smaller hands. And now we're in a situation whereby these same manipulators now are going for a one-world government structure. It's not enough now to, take over a certain number of nations on the planet. No, they want to get the entire planet. And we have to remember that the true manipulators are not human beings. The true manipulators behind the worldwide conspiracy are extraterrestrial, alien beings. And they're called the Dracos and the reptilians. And more people who might be hearing this have to wake up to the fact that these aliens are behind the New World Order. And stop pretending this is not so. Stop telling yourself, well, I've never seen it. It can't be. You don't have to see it. It's there.
And there's plenty of evidence. Saying these are the aliens that are sneaking over the border in the Southwest.
No, I'm not talking about Mexican aliens. I'm talking about extraterrestrial aliens who've been on the planet hidden for a long time. Of course, they have the ability to, they have spacecraft. And the most important, the most significant way they can conceal themselves from us is that they are able to, what they normally exist in a slightly higher vibratory dimension than we exist in. So therefore, they could be physically in our presence, but we couldn't see them because they're vibrating at a higher frequency. However, they are influencing us, all of us, every human being on this planet being influenced, to some degree at least, by these negative aliens, because they are spiritually far below what a human being usually is. Their spiritual development is very primitive. And in order to sustain their conquest plans and to take over the planet, they need to have us, or attempt to influence us, so that our vibratory emotional reactions particularly are low, are lower, and similar to theirs. So that's why they try to stimulate fear. Fear is fear and anxiety, but also other lower base instincts and emotions, such as sexual lust, a sexual perversion, anger, and the sort of things that flow from excessive anger, beatings and murdering of other people or mutilating other people because of anger.
You could add ego identification too, couldn't you?
Yeah, that's another manipulative emotion, because they want to have you focused on greed, on self-aggrandizement, on cruel and merciless treatment of other competitors in the jungle. They want to keep us very much on a lower animal competitive racetrack. And the more we give in to influences of satanic gesturing and movies or TV or video games that go into violence or promote perverted behavior, whether that's sex with children, whether that's homosexual sex, whether that's bestiality, sadism, that type of thing. The more perverted it is, the more these negative aliens get you within their grasp. They are trying. So this is obviously why they are trying to beat out any allegiance to spirituality. This is why they're trying to destroy Christianity and the Catholic Church in particular. Those who are fronting the false and totally ridiculous notion that Jesus Christ never existed are working towards this end. They are individuals who are being controlled and directed by these extraterrestrial forces. Whether consciously or not, I don't know. Probably in most cases, no. But nevertheless, they are steering their lives in the direction that is most useful to them. They want to destroy spirituality, which means compassion towards other human beings, which means charity, which means forgiveness, which means love, which means the refusal to murder other people, etc. They want to beat that out of humans, and they want you to be as cruel as required and have no compunction about committing any act, no matter how vile, no matter how evil you may view it. They want people who will just do anything. So this is what they do with the intelligence services, mind control them. This is what they're doing with the military, of course, certainly the special forces. But gee, just ordinary army grunts who are going to Iraq, the Marines, they're being trained to be as vicious, cruel as, you know, any Nazi behaved during World War II. There's little difference between the way the Nazis treated Europeans in World War II and the way Americans treat Iraqi or Afghani people in those countries. I mean, it's about as bad as I've ever imagined it could be. So, and then here in this country, we have the same mentality of cruelty, inhumaneness, being taught to police. So police are going to these training sessions with contractors like Blackwater, and they're teaching them how to be incredibly cruel, inhumane, extremely harsh towards just ordinary people who are being picked up on the street for what? Loitering? For some little minor traffic offense? It's just amazing when you look at these cases of particularly individuals who've been tasered to death. When you examine what was the reason the police approached this guy in the first place, it's almost always a nothing reason. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they just decided to start hounding him and saying, you know, what are you doing here, and blah, 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 and get out of the car, and... And, you know, within 5 minutes, the guy's being tasered to death. This is the effect of these extraterrestrials affecting people's hearts and minds behind the scenes. And I know this probably sounds really far out to people who are just hearing it for the first time. But David Icke reported this phenomena as early as 1999 in his book, The Biggest Secret. The influence of these extraterrestrials on all humans around the world is enormous because they're working, they have much higher technology than we have, and they're aware of much more systems which we are not aware of. Human beings have far more capabilities than we are aware of. These extraterrestrials are aware of our higher abilities, and they are.
I wanted to make a comment on that, Ken,
okay,
if I could.
Go ahead.
It's, you know, I'm following what you're saying, and I'm agreeing with everything. You're hitting all these points right, you know, smack dab in the middle, bullseye in every one. The fact that they have been able through this programming and through all these different control mechanisms, you know, you're going to control the people, control the governments, create laws that slowly but surely eat away at sovereign rights, the rights under God, And by doing that, the more they do that, the more they separate us from our true nature and our true power, which is in recognition of our spiritual superiority. This is the one thing that they are really afraid of. And that's why their efforts to suppress us spiritually are so great. If we would only awaken spiritually, and or enough mentally to consider the fact that we have great spiritual power and really could come to an easy solution to solving this problem.
Yep.
Yet people are, they're in the box and they're trying to use the restrictions that come with being inside the box as the means to extricate themselves.
Yes. Yeah, that's
I don't know if that I made myself clear.
Yeah,
but
it's a good analogy because as you said that, I'm thinking of a film that I've seen. I'm sure we've all seen it in psychology class, of mice behavior when they're in a little box and there's a treat mechanism somehow, but there's also a little electric shock and how their let's say their choices that the mouse selects is based on the feedback he's getting from either the pain of the shock or the treat. And they would point out in this, he could avoid the entire, of course, what's happening, the mouse is vacillating back and forth from the pain, not wanting to receive it, but trying to flee towards the treat part, but he was being treated in such a way that he was forced to vacillate from one side of the box to the other, whereby in the middle of the box there was an escape door, an escape opening that had he gone through it, he would have completely freed himself of being caught in the either-or choice of, pain, treat, he's vacillating back and forth. So people need to realize that there is a door there to free yourself from what just appears to be, lesser of two evil choices. Like I mentioned the fellow said to me in his email in the earlier part of this talk tonight. I said that this fellow thought that going with Obama was the lesser of two evils. He used the word less pernicious of the two because he was only talking. He only was thinking. He only imagined. He limited himself to two candidates, where in fact there's five candidates running, but he wasn't even thinking about it. And what you're saying is an important analogy, that there is another way to free ourselves, and it's this self-realization that we are powerful spiritual beings who can create with our mind. We can create reality. And I know it's easy to say, but it has shown itself in my own life. I've seen the evidence often enough to realize the principle is true and it actually works.
Mm-hmm.
And we've particularly seen it with the activity of sylphs in destroying chemtrails.
You've seen me use that too.
Yes. Anyway, it's just a principle. That's the door out of it. That they might think they can lock you down in fear. However, we can, as off the wall as this sounds, we can think our way out of this with intention, with focused intention, and working through a center of, an inner center of love and forgiveness for all involved, to will, to determine that they are not going to succeed in their plans. They have a lot of dark plans that they're hoping to unfold in the next month and years. And enough people hearing this are going to have the self-realization, I'm not going to allow this to happen. We can will reality to follow our desires. We can create reality with our mind. And enough people
believe it. You have to believe it. If you just say the words, but deep in your heart of hearts, you don't really believe it, you don't get the effect. It only happens when you truly believe it. It's gradual. You will not see, the sun spin around like a top in the sky. But you will see it if you look for it and try to direct your intention to accomplish something. The easiest thing to start with is when you see chemtrails over your head, call in the sylphs, mentally call in the sylphs to make an appearance and gobble up the chemtrails like you did at that baseball game. You saw it, and the 12 people sitting around you saw it. And I have a couple dozen people that send me email. They said, hey, I tried it, and I couldn't get over it. A sylph showed up and started eating the chemtrails.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this little exercise called the visual ray. People can dissolve an ordinary cumulus cloud with their eyes by just staring at it and running their eyeball back and forth and running their eye sight, their line of sight, back and forth, up and down of the cloud in about 2.5 to 3 minutes. What was a nice little puffy cotton ball type of cumulus cloud that you've been working on with your eyes for the last 2 or 3 minutes simply will disappear. It'll gradually fade away. Anyone listening to this simply has to try it. I have a couple articles on my website about it. It's called the visual ray, but man, that's an empowering exercise. I know I was giddy the first time I did it. I read it in a book written by Trevor Constable, so I went outside and I tried it, and blow me down, it worked. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, today I must have seen about 50 chemtrails being sprayed all over the sky.
Yeah.
And I was in a car driving back home, and I looked all over the sky, north, south, east, west, didn't matter which direction I looked. There were streaks from one end of the sky to the other. All of a sudden this started, and I thought to myself, what's going on? Is Barack Obama in town or something?
Yes.
Immediately after I had that thought, there was an announcement on the car radio that he was campaigning in the area.
Oh!
And
and wow.
And I began looking at, using what you just called the visual ray, I looked at one of the chemtrails and made it disappear as it was coming out of the tail end of the jet. And then I called the sylphs, and by the time I got home, the sky was almost completely clear. And now I stopped at that one point, and I tell you, you know, again, it works. You can do it driving in a car. You can do it while you're going for a walk or sitting in your yard, shoveling snow, washing your car, mowing your lawn. It doesn't matter what you're doing.
Yep.
That's how much power we have.
Yeah, we do have power. These are not just words. We're trying to say here to sound inspirational. We truly, all human beings, have a great deal of power far beyond what we were taught or what we assumed we have. And you need to lock onto it, because now is the time to get it to work for you. We're getting into very dangerous waters here. The New World Order is accelerating their agenda, and the day will probably come where even issues like food and so forth could be a concern. But if you know that you can create, there's a fellow, well, an entity, a consciousness, I should say, that for, I don't know, 20, 22 years came through a man who used to live here in Southern California, San Diego. His name is Mark Probert, and this person who came through him, meaning he used his voice to express himself, was called Iyada. And I'm really very interested in what Iyada had to say, because I find his counsel to be filled with wisdom. And as it turns out, through a lucky turn of events, I was able to obtain a number of recordings of Iyada, spoken through Mark Probert. And what he says very often in talking to the audience, he says that we all have the capacity to create. We have the creator within us. Now, this matches what other great metaphysical teachers have said, including Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
that the great Hindu masters, for instance, also make this point. The Hindus refer to this center of godliness and creativity in each and every one of us, the Atman.
Mm-hmm.
But it's I hear the same sentiment from Chinese metaphysicians, from Persian, from Indian, etc. So, and now Iyada, who used to, if you're fortunate enough to hear the tapes, he used to live on the earth 500,000 years ago. Now that, you know, a lot of people don't think humans were here, but they were here even longer than that. And he had a civilization that was largely, much of it was decimated in a huge earthquake. They used to live in the area that is now currently called Mongolia. And, but anyway, this consciousness is very much alive, and he's a very interesting fellow, who has a lot of wonderful and interesting things to say. And he points this out, that you all have the creative, creator within you. You can create, he says, you just don't know it, for one, and therefore you don't use it because you don't know you have this capability. But he points out, which all metaphysical masters discuss, is that earthly life, third density life, is an illusion. Now, it doesn't mean that it's not here. Of course it's here. But the fact of the matter is that it's created with the mind. And therefore, we can change three-dimensional reality with our mind.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, when I'm teaching a metaphysics class, it's been a while since I taught one, although in a sense I'm teaching on the radio all the time. I had the opportunity to describe to one of the students was asking what it's like when you recognize that you have these gifts or these abilities, and they start to awaken, and you're living your life now with the consciousness that these abilities are real. And I don't mean you have to have some magnificent thing happen or some startling thing that scares you out of your wits, but just something simple like what you're talking about. And I said, well, it's almost like, can you recall a time, I would ask the question, can you recall a time when you were down and out, didn't have much money, maybe were totally out of money and maybe hadn't even eaten for a few days? Could have happened when you were in college, or could have happened after you lost a job, or just maybe you lost some money and hard times fell upon you. And you reached deep down inside yourself, and still nothing came out. And then one day you realized, man, I've been wearing, you know, this pair of pants for a few days, and these things are really worn out. I should get a better pair of pants. And you go into your closet, just looking through your clothes, and here you find this brand new pair of pants that maybe you wore one time. And you'd hung them back up in the closet on a hanger, and wow, now you're all elated because you found these trousers.
Yeah.
And you put them on, and you go about your business, and at some point in the day you reach into your pocket and you find a $100 bill that you had left in there.
Yep.
Now, that the feeling, the surprise and the joy and the realization that things were not like you like they appeared to be, and that you know, you're at a place now where you're considering, now I can eat, I can do whatever with this money. And you may even have the thought of putting it to good use rather than just going out and blowing it on something frivolous. So you now have a new appreciation for the money. You have a new appreciation for following that hunch that you had to change your pants. I'm just using this you know, as a hypothetical example.
Yeah.
But the point is that act caused you to realize that you still had some money, where you felt that you were penniless. You really found out that you weren't. Now, when you take that principle and apply it in another way, you can turn that into productivity the same way. You can create a source of income. You can create a job. And it might be a bit more difficult than going in your closet and picking out the right pair of pants that contains a $100 bill. But the point is that if you do nothing, nothing is going to happen. You'll get exactly the results that you expected to get.
Right.
And a spiritual awakening, even though that manifested itself into the physical, what's the point of having a spiritual awakening of any kind if you can't live it, if you can't experience it? So you have to bring it and manifest it in some way into a physical reality. But it doesn't have to be a repetition of the old patterns, because you're just applying that and you're staying in the, inside the box if you don't think of expanding into something greater.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's the principle I suppose we're both trying to amplify, is that anytime you find yourself in an adverse situation, what will bring change is first you need to set the change. I always mention, though, however, in doing this, is that I always ask for spiritual help. You can appeal to just ask for help and not even attach a name to it. You'll get the help. The idea is to request help gives you a tremendous advantage in place of just doing it on your own. Now, you can accomplish much on your own, as it were, but when you ask for assistance, in addition to your own focused intent, you can get a lot of very easy to see and quickly, rapidly manifesting, I should say, things and events. That's happened to me a lot. It happens to me all the time.
Now, that can be a person contacting you that all of a sudden needs some help. Let's say you're without a job, for example, or without a source of income. In the same situation, you have no food to eat, no money, and you could say a prayer. You could decide that you're going to set a goal for yourself and really consider what it is that you're going to do so you don't find yourself stuck in that same situation.
Yeah.
And out of nowhere, you'll get a phone call from someone.
Yep. You have to realize that it does function this way, and you have to believe it. If you don't believe it, you don't get the action. Part of it is understanding that there is a true universal law at work here, but you can sabotage it by telling yourself, even on a subconscious level, no, it can't be. You can sabotage these things, and very often people who try to do something along these lines will go along with you when things are, and say, oh, sure, oh, yeah, I agree, oh, yeah, blah, 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 when things are okay. But when they're on the ropes and there's true, genuine strife in their life, and you remind them of this, they will very often abandon the belief. And I have a friend who was in that bag. You would, in talking to him, very well-versed in metaphysical knowledge. And when things were going well for him, he would just, oh, yeah, of course, sure, that's how it works. But when he fell on hard times himself, and I brought it up to him that he's creating his reality, because if you're in a difficult situation, either you're having some money trouble, there's some sort of pressure on you for something that's creating a lot of stress in you, if you give in to the worry, if you give in to the stress, if you process negative thoughts, like in this case, this guy kept on telling himself,
this always happens to me. When I need the help the most, that's when I, you know, I have the legs, the chair pulled out from under me, and it always happens to me. Anyway, he's repeating these mantras to me, and I'm telling him, you're creating it. You're bringing it because this is what you're broadcasting. You're broadcasting, non-success. You're broadcasting the idea of it always happens to me. You're bringing to you what you're telling yourself. You're saying, well, it always happens to me and it's like bad luck. And well, yeah, you're bringing it. And so that's when it's really most important to remember that these principles work is when you are under pressure and down and out and really worried, that's the time to apply it with the inner confidence that it's going to pan out. You will get the call, or you will, something will show up. I've had a friend, another friend, who's really been on the skids for the last couple of years, and he's really, really, really had it much tougher than you or I or most people. And when he was in his most dejected state, he'd be saying these sort of things, you know, everything works against me and blah, blah, blah. And I would remind him, I says, you're causing it. You're setting up.
He's creating it.
You're creating it, right. It's just bouncing back at you because you're broadcasting it. I told him a number of times, you've got to go the other way and you've got to stop processing the negative and stop, you know, becoming angry at this person or that person or whatever. I said, you know, you've got to realize that it's what you're putting out is bouncing back to you. And as it turns out, he had to go through another, let's say, difficult period of 5 or 6 months in which he created the circumstances that caused him lots of personal pain. And I sort of let him endure that without going out of my way to rescue him because I wanted him to wake up. And then when he got out of that, he sort of turned over a new leaf. It's kind of gradual, but I helped him. I gave him the help that he needed to get him on the right course. And this time around, instead of doing things foolishly like he had done in the past, he took the more correct course, and he did the intelligent, proper thing, and things started to work for him. And then that naturally elated him, and now he's happier. And once you get happy, then this energy flows much better because, you know, in a happy heart, you know, really resonates with the universe. So your creativity quotient goes way up.
Yeah, you're at a higher vibration when you're happy.
Exactly, and that's just what was happening to him. So every day there was another instance of unbelievable good news, unexpected things that showed up out of the blue, things that he lost something, couldn't get it back, and he was so angry about it. And as it turns out, that he goes into a convenience store, and one of the prime things he needed was identification, and the guy who is responsible for taking his stuff and his identification returned his ID to that store. And this was months prior to him walking into the store, but he simply was floored when the owner of the store said, "Wait a minute, I have something for you." Now, he needed that ID so badly because he was prevented from doing a lot of things without a picture ID. And the fact that this man was holding on to this for 4 or 5 months while this man was incapacitated due to his foolish decisions, that came over him like a tsunami. He realized, oh my God, oh my God. He realized that and I'm not his teacher, he knows as much about metaphysics as I do, but the realization came to him that the law we're talking about, the universal law, works just the way we say it works. You get back what you put out. So anyway, he just started to get on the track, got real positive about everything, and just one wonderful event after another. The guy's just doing so well. It's amazing. And so I saw it firsthand with him just recently. This law works. It law works. So it means the most to do it and believe it when you're in your greatest adversity. And the common mistake is to kind of put wait for the good stuff to turn up. And if it doesn't turn up in the timetable that you set for it, then you get dejected, and then you go the opposite way and saying, this doesn't work. And you just get back on the merry-go-round. No. You got to believe it works. You can shorten up the time by simply putting it in a time frame. So you set the desire, the focused intent, and then give it a time frame, saying be realistic. You can't be crazy. Be realistic, but give it a time frame: 3 days, 5 days, a week, 2 weeks, whatever is reasonable and realistic. Forget about it. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to think about it every day. It doesn't hurt to pray. But once you set the intention, let the universe do the work. By you fretting about it, you're irritating the process. I know this sounds strange, but it's true. When you set the thought, set the time, set the date, let the universe take care of it. Just set it out there and then go about your business, but don't do negative things. Don't process negative thoughts. Don't, eat poorly, don't take drugs, don't get drunk. I mean, don't do stupid things to lower your vibration. Mm-hmm. Live moderately, live on the right path. You'll see, you'll get it. The response is very weakish in the beginning, and that's the more you practice this art of creating, the more forceful and the sooner you will get the results. And the results will escalate in quantity and quality as time goes by.
Yes. Now, Ken, unfortunately, we are out of time,
we have
run over 2 hours substantially, but we did that with Seth's permission this evening and his blessing. So we want to thank Seth Hendrick, board operator, for giving us that extra time.
Oh, yes.
It was an interesting evening. We covered a lot of stuff. And, of course, we're just trying to bring some sanity to this whole election issue and discern what's going on. And then, I think it was good that we could wrap this up with bringing people to a place where they can realize that they can affect change themselves. We don't need somebody to do their change on us.
Yes.
We've been through that our whole lives.
Yes.
And this country's been through it since its birth.
Yes.
So, I appreciate all the wonderful information. I want to let the listening audience know that they can visit your website at educate-yourself.org or educate-yourself.org. We go through this every time. And you are approachable via your email. You do have a little instruction there on how to contact you and the protocol and all that. But anyone that visits your site will find there's a wealth of information there, lots of interesting stuff, outside the box type stuff too. But it all points to the truth. And it's a very popular and very valuable website. So, I want to thank you for being on the show and doing the work that you're doing, and I look forward to your next visit.
Oh, great. Thanks, Doug.
Well, you have yourself a great end of the week. Folks, we have Jim Murray with us again tomorrow night. And in the meantime, I want to thank Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Again, Seth Hendrick on the sound. And most of all, our listening audience for tuning in. I wish everyone out there a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.